Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. The story of Lloyd Gaines, who was part of a civil rights lawsuit against the University of Missouri over access to the University of Missouri Law School, is a vital part of civil rights history in the United States and obviously here at the University of Missouri. A recent book, Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation, from University of Missouri Press, looks a lot deeper into this case, into the life of Lloyd Gaines, and into his disappearance after the Supreme Court decision. We're going to talk with the author James Endersby tonight on Thinking Out Loud, learn more about Lloyd Gaines, and tell you about a lecture he'll be giving next week on the subject. Talking about Lloyd Gaines with Dr. James Endersby tonight, Thinking Out Loud. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. Our guest this evening is Dr. James Endersby. He is an associate professor of political science here at the University of Missouri, and with another professor, William Horner, wrote the book Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation. It's on University of Missouri Press. He'll be giving a lecture next Tuesday evening at the Stotler Lounge at Memorial Union, titled Substantially Equal, Lloyd Gaines and Legal Efforts for Desegregation in Missouri Higher Education. And we're going to talk about the lecture, about the book, and Lloyd Gaines and his role in the history of our university. And Dr. Endersby, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the importance of the research and why this book was written. I feel like there is, for most people who've been on this campus for a very long time, a slightly vague understanding of who Lloyd Gaines was without a lot of depth to it. And it feels like this book added quite a bit of depth to that understanding for those of us that looked at it.
That was certainly our intent. Both Bill Horner and I teach freshman American government from time to time. And in the process of teaching that, we usually talk about Lloyd Gaines and the case of Gaines versus Canada, because it's the first civil rights case that went to the United States Supreme Court, which led to a series of civil rights cases. So it's an important case, and for students here, it's a Missouri-linked course, and so we tended to talk about it, as most of our faculty do in political science. But we didn't know a lot about it. You described it as a sort of a vague notion. Most folks in Columbia are familiar with the name, but not really sure about the history. So we tried to rectify that, since there really wasn't a full recounting of the story of Lloyd Gaines in the civil rights case.
And there's kind of three or four different things going on with the book here. First of all, there's the basic story, the biography of Lloyd Gaines, which is interesting in and of itself, and the U.S. history and Missouri state history that goes along with that. There's the court case and the legal study that goes on here, and then the importance of the precedent that it set. And then a very interesting and kind of frightening story of a person who essentially disappeared, and what seems to be a criminal case that was never really truly got the answer to it. So there's three different parts to it there. Let me start with the first one, and that is just the background of Lloyd Gaines. You talk about his early years from Mississippi, came with his mother to St. Louis when he was in his teens, and this is an era where there's a lot of this happening. African Americans from the Deep South are moving to the larger cities of the North, including St. Louis, and a lot of change happening there.
That's right. There's a great migration from Mississippi and Arkansas, in fact, most of the southern states, up to the North. Many of these folks migrated and stopped in St. Louis. Some went on to Chicago and Detroit and so forth. But it was an attempt to escape the more repressive segregation in the Deep South. And St. Louis had a substantial black middle class. There were lots of opportunities. There was relative political equality. Blacks could vote in St. Louis. Blacks could even get elected to office in St. Louis. So there were, and there were lots of economic opportunities. So St. Louis was a good stopping place. At the same time, Missouri was a segregated state. There were definite divisions between blacks and whites, and education, which is the focus of our story, was central to that segregation process.
And I was going to mention that. On the one hand, there was still the segregation in the schools. On the other hand, the schools he would have attended in St. Louis, we talk about Vachon High School at that point, compared to the school he would have been attending at a segregated school in a fairly small town in Mississippi, I'm sure there was a pretty substantial difference there.
It was very substantial. He came from basically a one-room shack as a school in Mississippi, and then got into what was for the time a pretty advanced a system of education for blacks in St. Louis. There were many more opportunities in St. Louis than there would have been in Mississippi. And Lloyd Gaines was a bright individual. It's clear from his school records that he was a very sharp guy, very bright, and really wanted to achieve something in his life.
James Enders, be with us, the professor of political science here at the university. The book, again, is titled Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation. We jump forward a little bit. He would go to Lincoln University, but it took a little while to get there. And that's one of the things I found interesting about this story, is that it doesn't follow the typical chronology of graduating high school at 18, went to college, graduated college at 22, and would have been an L1 at about 22 or 23 years old. There's some side track along the way here.
Yes, that's right. He accelerated through the classes that were available in St. Louis, but at the same time didn't immediately have a track to Lincoln, so he went to Stowe College, which now become Harris Stowe. He went there for a short time too before he went on to get his undergraduate education at Lincoln University.
And then there's a pretty significant amount of time, which I found very interesting in the book, talking about the history of Lincoln University. And I think for those people who aren't around the campus or they're in Jefferson City or alumni that may be listening, it's probably a similar situation to what we were talking about with Lloyd Gaines. I think people in Missouri have a little bit of an idea of what Lincoln University is all about, but maybe not nearly the depth of understanding as to why it was founded and its importance in the history of the state.
That's right. Lincoln University was established by contributions from Civil War soldiers, the 62nd and 65th Colored Infantry in the Civil War. They made contributions to establish an institution for higher learning, specifically for African Americans, to provide educational opportunities that would otherwise be denied them. So it was soldiers in the Civil War who collectively put their contributions and their efforts into creating an institution to help them. There's a lot of discussion originally on where to locate Lincoln University. In fact, for a brief time, there was a discussion to put it in St. Louis, but it became established as a brand new institution in Jefferson City. And so it became really the only institution that was available for black Missourians to get an education. But it also, Lincoln University also became a very prominent institution of higher education for black Americans across the United States. For a long time, it was known as sort of the Harvard of the Midwest for black intellectuals and other educators who wanted to teach African Americans. So it really was a prominent institution, particularly up through the 20s and into the 1930s.
The NAACP, in the course of the time frame we're talking about here between the two world wars, was encouraging young black people to go into the law. And it's pretty self-evident, but it gives some detail as to why it was important that there be black people going into the law, which is how we end up with the Lloyd Gaines case.
That's right. It's particularly important for black lawyers because even though white lawyers may have supported civil rights vocally, it's a little bit different to dedicate your life and your career for advancing the civil rights of black Americans and other Americans, particularly at this period of time. And so the NAACP really created a structure. In fact, it was sort of almost exclusively the structure to try to advance civil rights and to eliminate segregation by using attorneys. So the NAACP established a legal arm and came up with a proposal to try to attack segregation in the courts. And they became very lucky by getting the very prominent African-American attorney Charles Houston as first the special assistant and then the head of this legal defense arm of the NAACP to specifically get a plan to try to get more civil rights. And to do that, they needed black attorneys. They needed black attorneys in the NAACP But they also, you know, you're pursuing most of these cases in the states. And so you also need black attorneys that are willing to commit their time and effort, and in some cases, to commit their career to pursue these civil rights cases in the state courts. So Charles Houston, through the NAACP, really organized the structure to try to pursue these cases.
And I found one of the things, so there's a lot that's useful and interesting about the book, but I think for people to learn more about Charles Hamilton Houston, because that's a name that may not be as familiar as Thurgood Marshall. Houston was, as I understand it, sort of Thurgood Marshall's mentor, and
that's right.
Understanding the process that would lead to getting Thurgood Marshall and the young civil rights attorneys that would follow then in his footsteps. So that I thought was very interesting, is just learning a little bit more about Charles Houston and where his role was in all of this.
Right. He was an exceptional legal mind. At one point, later on, he was even considered for the Supreme Court. He could have been the first African-American member of the Supreme Court, but he was passed over. And eventually, his lieutenant, who Houston had taught in law school at Howard University, and then brought him into the NAACP as his assistant, was Thurgood Marshall, who had become the first member of the Supreme Court who was African-American.
The lecture, again, is happening a week from tonight. It's next Tuesday, April the 4th. The lecture will be at 6:30 at Stotler Lounge at the Memorial Union here at Mizzou, with a book signing to follow. James Endersby is our guest. The book is called Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation. There's one line in particular here that really kind of struck me, and it kind of shows some of the strategizing that was going here. They said that rather than seek out cases to fight against segregation at universities, that they would wait for litigants to come to them, speaking of the NAACP. And in studying some of the later cases that Thurgood Marshall would litigate, I think we look back on some of these sometimes as just kind of a matter of this was morally right and it won, and what was morally wrong lost. And I think that in looking at some of these cases in Houston and Marshall and some of these others, these were very smart people who used smart strategies to bring about major change, to which there was a whole lot more opposition than maybe we realize.
Oh, absolutely. And there were a number of individuals who at one time would volunteer to be a plaintiff for a case, but there needed to be a strong case. If you're going to take a case to the United States Supreme Court, it needs to be a strong case where that in this case, a student who wants to pursue higher education, you need to find somebody that there is no question that they should be admitted to the institution that they're applying for. And so you've got a lot of people that, you know, at least want to give lip service to helping, but you need somebody who has a strong case behind them, that you can make a strong case that this person would have been admitted, and the only reason that this person was not admitted was their race or their color.
We're talking with Dr. James Endersby. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. One of the things that it kind of hits home for those of us in my particular profession is the role of the black press in Missouri in these desegregation efforts of the St. Louis Argus, the St. Louis American, which is still active, and the Kansas City Call, and the Lucille Bluford case, which came along right about at the same time, who was a black woman who would eventually go to the University of Missouri School of Journalism and then run the Kansas City Call for decades. And it seems like the black press at these newspapers and the attorneys of the NAACP were working very closely together on kind of a similar path, a similar agenda.
Yes, the press was the public relations arm of the NAACP legal efforts. So they had to have a strong backing, a strong support among the publishers and the writers in the black press to pursue this. The average African-American didn't see the long goal of defeating segregation, just like all of us. We're more interested in the short-term goals. We're more interested in the next paycheck or the next advantage we can get. And sometimes we can't see the long-term goal. But the attorneys for the NAACP and the writers in the black press that you mentioned, they're trying to coordinate and shore up some support for, we need to establish this long-term legal agenda to provide equal rights for everyone. So there was a lot of coordination that was going between those two organizations, the press and the attorneys.
And the attorneys. We've talked about the one side of this about Charles Houston and the other lawyers of the NAACP and obviously Lloyd Gaines. Talk a little bit about who the major players would be from the other side of this, from the university's side, and what kind of the basic foundations were of their legal argument to maintain the segregation policies. Why not just avoid the conflict, allow Gaines and other African Americans to attend these grad level classes that they were opposing them going to?
There was some discussion in the legal community about, you know, well, if this was just one or two students, we could just sort of look the other way. I think the state of Missouri and the University of Missouri had vested interests in maintaining the system of segregation for the long term. It's one of those things that's difficult to understand today, but at the time, segregation was the law of the land in about half of the United States. And there were a lot of interests that wanted to maintain that. And I don't think anybody from the state or the university wanted to upset that equilibrium. They decided to come down hard and have a strict defense of no African Americans in a white institution, such as the university. And so they would not admit anyone who was black. So they really drew the line at that stage.
There are cases throughout the history of the civil rights movement and the opposition to it where there are, you know, the instance one could think of George Wallace standing in the doorway of the school and refusing to let people in, of people just setting their heels and fighting against it. And then there are probably more cases where there were attempts to come up with a compromise that gave a little bit to African Americans without the full notion of equality there. And I want to ask about after the before the final decision, the Supreme Court gave Missouri the chance to kind of fix the problem on their own. The response that came out of the General Assembly is the Taylor Bill. And I want you to explain what the Taylor Bill is about, because I was not familiar with this before reading the book.
Yes, and I might go back one stage before.
Please.
Missouri set earlier than that in the 1920s in the Lincoln University Bill. The state of Missouri set up a system where if an African-American wanted to pursue education that was not available at Lincoln University, the state of Missouri would offer a tuition scholarship for them to go to another state. So a black Missourian who wanted to pursue, for instance, a law degree, which is what Lloyd Gaines wanted to pursue, at least on paper, at least according to the law, the state of Missouri could provide a tuition scholarship so they could go to Illinois or Iowa or Nebraska or Kansas. So there was this system that, at least on paper, provided some form of equal opportunities for black Americans.
Okay.
Now, in reality, the program wasn't administered well. It wasn't funded well. After the time of the Gaines decision, where the Supreme Court clearly came down is there had to be substantially equal facilities. And if there was a law school for white students, there had to be a substantially equal law school for black students. The General Assembly responded with the Taylor Bill, which is to set up another law school specifically for black students and administer it through Lincoln University, although the Lincoln University School of Law was actually held in St. Louis. So the Taylor Bill gave Lincoln University the opportunity to create other programs in law and then later on in journalism and agriculture and other disciplines as well to create black alternatives to whatever the University of Missouri had.
What we would call separate but equal.
Yes, and of course that was the immediate response from both sides is, you may say that you have these separate and equal institutions, but you're creating these sort of fly-by-night Jim Crow institutions of higher education, which are not equal to what the University of Missouri could offer.
The book, again, is titled Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation. I'm going to editorialize for a moment and make mention of the fact that it is available through University of Missouri Press, and what a fine resource, in my opinion, the University Press is. They are at press.umsystem.edu, and there's a lot of very interesting stuff, particularly if you are interested in the history of our state and our university, a lot of interesting things to find there. Again, it's press.umsystem.edu. The case finally made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. As we know, it would be ruled in favor of Gaines and against the university. We know now what a monumental case this was, what a groundbreaking case this was. At the time What was the reaction like here on campus in the state legislature?
Within the state legislature, it was largely panic. There needs to be some system to deal with the United States Supreme Court decision. The state's official position, the position of the General Assembly, was always emphasizing the substantially equal. So if we create something else, like the Lincoln University Law School, we're sort of satisfying that. I think the black press had a completely different interpretation, and what would ultimately be the correct interpretation is that the blacks saw this is the crack that is going to break down the entire dam of segregation, because the Gaines case then would lead to other legal efforts and sort of continue to chip away one Supreme Court case at a time until we would ultimately reach Brown versus Board of Education. So there were two different views. You also mentioned on the University of Missouri campus, and I'm a faculty member at the University of Missouri, and I'm somewhat ashamed of the way the faculty responded to this, because generally speaking, although, you know, there are individual differences, the university and the faculty came down in strong support of segregation. For the students of the university, it was much more divided. White students both came down supporting that, you know, desegregation is the future. We need to accept this. We need to invite black students into the university and move on. There was also, of course, an equally strong reaction supporting segregation, you know, sort of the no, not ever response among students, too. But the students were at least more open. They were discussing the situation much more openly and much more seriously than I think the faculty and the administration did.
I was struck. I had a conversation years ago with Arvor Strickland, who was the first full-time black faculty member here at the University of Missouri, and was struck by a similar comment that he made about what was going on at the time. He said there were faculty members that were supportive of his efforts to be a part of the faculty, but that there were a lot who were not, and that just kind of goes against what we think of, you know, regardless of one's party or one's political affiliations. One expects a professor to be open-minded about issues like this, and learning that they weren't always is always a little bit shocking.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yes, absolutely right.
We're talking with James.
The only thing I could say, though, is in defense of the university and the faculty, recently in Columbia, we've heard the news again about Jim Scott, and now there's a memorial to him and a plaque down there. But Jim Scott was a employee of the University of Missouri who was lynched down mm-hmm. there off of Stewart Road on the old bridge. We should remember that the adults in Columbia at that time remembered that instance. That happened, I think it was in 1923. The Lloyd Gaines case is pursuing its way through courts in the late 1930s, from 1935 through 1938. And so people remembered that. And although it's not really written in much of their correspondence and writings at the time, I think a lot of the faculty and staff at the university and a lot of the folks in Columbia generally feared that violence would be a result if we tried to desegregate the University of Missouri at that time. So I do understand a perspective. It doesn't explain it away. It doesn't make it right. It's still the morally wrong position to take. But I do sort of understand where you could come up with that view and why you would defend segregation.
It's always more complicated than it seems when you look back with the benefit of history to see. But I think you're right. I think we do kind of imagine the people that supported segregationists as mustache-twirling movie villains, and that there was a lot more complicated than that. We're talking with Dr. James Endersby. Again, the book is titled Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation. His lecture will be next Tuesday evening, April 4th, 6:30 at Stotler, with a book signing to follow. It's sponsored by the State Historical Society of Missouri and is part of the series African American Experience in Missouri Lectures from the University of Missouri. Let's talk here in our closing moments, Dr. Endersby, about the other part of the Lloyd Gaines case, and that is the fact that he would, in spite of winning the lawsuit, never attend the University of Missouri, disappearing after the case was settled. And the book looks, as well as we can, given what we know, on an exceptionally complicated part of this story. There wasn't an obvious understanding of what happened. I was shocked to learn by reading this that there were some in the black press that were at least implying that Gaines just sort of wandered off on his own, that it was irresponsible behavior on his part somehow. How much do we know about what happened to Lloyd Gaines?
We don't. It is one. We don't know what happened to him. It is one of the great mysteries of American political history. Sometime after the case, Gaines did sort of a lecture tour through Missouri, talked in St. Louis and Kansas City, took a train up to Chicago, and in about 3 months or so after the Supreme Court case came down, he left one night from the place he was staying to go buy stamps. It was a rainy night in Chicago, and officially, at least, no one ever heard from him again. We don't know what happened to him. There's a possibility, of course, that there was some form of foul play, although there's no evidence of that. There's no actual evidence of a crime. There was no missing persons report. Lloyd Gaines had sort of an odd personality. He would take off for months at a time, and his family wouldn't hear from him. So we just don't know. And it was critical for the NAACP and his lawyers because they needed to establish a part two of the Supreme Court case, just like Brown versus Board of Education actually had two decisions, once to abolish separate but equal, and the second to establish the enforcement of that decision with all deliberate speed. They were looking for the same kind of things. They needed Lloyd Gaines for the second part, and he was just missing. They didn't. The NAACP did not know where he was. His family did not know where he was. He just disappeared.
We have just a couple of minutes left, but talk a little bit about Lloyd Gaines' legacy here at the university. He was granted an honorary JD in 2006. His name, obviously, is one of two names on the Black Culture Center here at the University of Missouri, and your book now adding to the amount of knowledge here at the university about Lloyd Gaines and his importance.
Yeah, even though his disappearance left his attorneys in a quandary and couldn't pursue the civil rights case at that time, it is clear that Lloyd Gaines was a true civil rights hero. It is possible he simply left because the pressure and the stress of the publicity among African Americans, they all knew who he was, that constant stress. He was also fearful of being kidnapped or the subject of violence and so forth. It's simply possible that that stress was just too much for him to go on. But regardless of whether he left willingly or something happened to him, he was a civil rights hero. He was willing to stand up at a time when almost no one else would stand up and support the civil rights agenda, that he would stand up and say that he should be admitted to the University of Missouri, just as all other good students in the state would. So he deserves recognition regardless of the outcome of his case, of his disappearance.
We have given you just a small sample of the information that's available. I really would encourage you to find the book if you haven't already, Lloyd Gaines and the Fight to End Segregation, from University of Missouri Press, again written by James Endersby and William Horner. The lecture next Tuesday night, 6:30 at Stotler Lounge at the Memorial Union. And our guest has been the author of the book, Dr. James Endersby. And Dr. Endersby, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
And that is our program for this evening, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Our thanks to Dr. James Endersby for being our guest. Our associate producer is Trevor Harris. I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.